Today we're talking to the Thomas brothers. They're trying to buy a house together. Their situation is very, very common here in the Sacramento area. As always, we got Aaron, who's going to walk us through the scenario. Aaron, how's it going?
Hey, what's going on, Mark? Glad to be here and to talk about the Thomas brothers. This is a scenario where, you know, if you were to go on, you know, Google or YouTube and, you know, you start searching for, you know, first-time home buyer hacks and, you know, just how to basically like maximize your opportunities, there's a lot of suggestions that are out there that, you know, are really great ideas, but a lot of people, you know, for whatever reason, they don't execute on them. For the Thomas brothers, you know, this is just like the perfect scenario for them to take advantage of some, you know, pretty popular house hacks. So excited to talk about this stuff.
This is going to be an interesting one too. And I would say before you even think about getting involved with a family member, you got to have a very solid relationship with them. This could be very contentious if you go down the wrong road. So you got to have a real family that's kind of like solid behind this. But I also think I'm with Aaron on this one, that this is something that I wish I would have done with my brother earlier on down the road. I mean, it makes sense. The idea of doing maybe some house hacking, getting both people on board. It just makes sense. So let's introduce you to the Thomas family. We got Jason and John, both single, data entry, and they're doing part-time data entry because they're still finishing up their school. Credit scores, Jason has a 685 and John has a 710. They're both W-2'd. Boom. Gross. Each one has about $25,000 they're making a year. In the bank, they got about $10,000 total, and that's combined. Their DTI is around 39%, which we like. Now, what are the things that we're looking at this deal? They call you up and they say, hey, look, this is what we're looking for. What are you thinking, Aaron?
Well, I mean, right out of the gate, they're you know, the first thing that I'm looking at is they're probably just on their own, they're not going to make enough to qualify, you know, just with the amount of income that they've got. However, you know, because of their situation, their dad's actually going to be willing to be a co-signer. We call that in the industry a non-occupied co-borrower, but it basically means that, you know, somebody's co-signing to the loan, and we basically get to add their income into the equation. We do this very often, where, you know, a lot of times mom, dad, you know, sometimes it's other family members or like some really, really close friends, that, you know, do that kind of thing where they're basically helping somebody else stretch their debt to income ratio to qualify for a mortgage. But in this particular scenario, because, you know, the boys are going to college basically, so the parents are already, you know, financially involved in, you know, their monthly expenses, helping them, you know, kind of support them through the process. And so from a financial perspective, you know, this can actually be a much better, you know, outcome, not just on a monthly, but in the long term, if, you know, instead of renting a place or being in the dorms or something like that, because rents are, you know, expensive, especially if you're going to be near the college, you know, Sac State, you know, most of the neighborhoods around there, you know, the rents are pretty high. And so for their scenario, you know, I always joke around, but I'm like, man, if I could, you know, hop into a time machine and go back and, you know, talk to young Aaron, you know, if I was in my 20s, and, you know, I was already going to have roommates, I was already, you know, I'm not going to be by myself at that age, you know, just financially. And, you know, plus people like having roommates. It takes a while before you become like an old curmudgeon and you want to be by yourself. Right. So it's like, you know, you're most likely already going to be in that scenario. So being able to basically leverage, you know, your parents to help you qualify for a house really kind of opens the doors, especially if you're willing to rent out a room or two. And if you're trying to essentially like set yourself up for the future, you know, one of the things that you and I talk about a lot is basically how most people that are buying their dream house or their next house, when they're making a big fat down payment, most of them did not save up that money. You know, some of them did, but most, what did they do? They sold the house that they've been living in for 5, 10, 20 years or whatever, and they've, you know, collected equity over the course of time, and that's their war chest that they use to go buy their next property. So the idea for, you know, for the Thomas family is not only to address their immediate need, which is, you know, they need to be, you know, they need housing while they're in school. And, you know, a long-term need would be potentially to purchase their own properties down the road. So, you know, the scenario that we're going to really dive into here really kind of checks off a lot of those boxes. And it's the fun house hack stuff that a lot of people, usually they're just not flexible enough in their lifestyle to take advantage of it, but it makes total financial sense. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and also the backstory between Jason and John is they're fraternity brothers. A client we worked with a little while ago, Justin. Justin was smart, and both Jason and John are Sacramento State. You know, they're going to Sacramento State. They're all in the same fraternity with Justin, and they were actually renting out rooms at the house that Justin purchased in the Rosemont area. And so they talked to Dad, and they introduced him to Justin. Justin's like, "Look, I got everyone here paying rent. They're actual fraternity people of mine and everything too, and they're basically paying my mortgage." And so Jason and John were like, light bulbs went off, and they're like, "Look, why don't we start getting into this road? Because look what it's doing for Justin. He has his first property. He's working his job and all that stuff too." And so it ended up kind of working in his favor that they had a case study to work with. And that's kind of why they reached out to me, we reached out to Aaron, because Justin did so well in the area. So they looked at Justin and they said, "Look, man, Justin's got this 4-bedroom, 2.5-bath that he bought for like under $500,000. Fraternity members are renting the house out. Justin's got the primary bedroom. This is a great deal for him. Dad, come on, let's go have a little bit of like dinner with Justin." Justin broke it down for him. And this is how this whole thing kind of set in motion. And like I said, like Aaron was talking about too, this is the smart move and the smart play, because for people who are looking to get out of school, the first thing you're going to notice is, you know, the barrier to entry to get your first job out there isn't going to be too high. And the idea of putting money together and maybe even getting your first property is a good way to start that path down to building wealth, building your resume, building your rental portfolio. And this is a good way to do it. And of course, Dad's going to want to help the sons out. So this is, everything looked really, really good in this scenario. And Dad was more than happy to help. And Dad was like, "Look, I see what Justin's doing. I think it makes sense. I definitely want to help Jason and John out, so I'm down here." So, okay, so what are the caveats in Dad's deals that you saw? Like that, so Dad called you up. He's like, "Hey, Aaron, I want to help my sons out. I know they're not making too much. I can come in because I'm making a lot more money than they are." What were the things you were seeing with Dad?
Well, I mean, you know, just like a lot of people later on in life, you know, Dad was much more established. You know, he had, you know, stellar credit. You know, 6-figure income, you know, already owned his own home, had a mortgage, but, you know, he's owned the home forever, like a lot of people his age, and has like a 2-something% 30-year fix. So his mortgage monthly payment isn't that much, doesn't really eat into his debt to income ratio much. So, you know, when you're adding a non-occupied co-borrower or a co-borrower, anytime you're adding somebody to the application, there's kind of like three things that you're adding. You're bringing in their credit score, which when you're getting a mortgage, the lender's going to take the lowest middle score of whoever is on the loan. So, you know, when you're thinking about, does Dad or any, you know, mom, uncle, whoever, the person that's being added to the equation, are they taking away from the deal or are they adding to the deal? And so from a credit standpoint, you know, Jason and John, we got a 685 FICO and a 710 mid score. So Dad's like, you know, almost 800 or something like that. So we're still using a 685 credit score. So Dad does not take away from the deal. And then when it comes to income, because Dad's liabilities are very low compared to his actual income, Dad is adding income to the deal, which stretches out the debt to income ratio, which is how we get to a 39% debt to income ratio with Jason and John both making about, you know, 25K a year doing their, you know, data entry jobs, you know, just really like entry level jobs. But you know, you don't have to, by the way, you don't have to be, you know, working your career job or your dream job or whatever to qualify for a loan. You just have to have a 2-year employment history and have job stability. And, you know, they check off the boxes on that. So really bringing dad into the equation basically makes it to where they qualify for something that they wouldn't qualify for on their own. Now, you could, you know, pose the question or steel man this where it's like, well, okay, if they can't qualify for it on their own, then they shouldn't be, you know, buying it. And in many, you know, scenarios, that would be, you know, some, you know, good logical path with that. But because Jason and John, you know, they're in their early 20s, they're going to college, they're already renting rooms, where it's, by the way, the parents, dad, they're supplementing, they're already paying into, you know, supplementing their you know, room and board, basically. So since they're already living in a scenario where it's realistic to have roommates and basically copy their friend Justin that we worked with a while back, that, you know, he did the ultimate house hack where you buy a place and you rent out the other rooms. And, you know, I think his actual monthly payment, like after the dust settled, was like only a couple hundred dollars or something. So he had a lot extra beer money left over and, you know, all sorts of extra money. So it makes a lot of sense because these guys are already going to be living that scenario for several years. And dad is already going to be financially committed to their scenario for several years. So really, like, committing to a house and all of that, although it's a big responsibility and everything from a financial perspective, this is actually going to be a big win for them, because just like Justin, they're going to be able to rent out the other rooms for a premium and, you know, basically pay far less for their actual mortgage than what they would be paying for in rent, which is a unique scenario because, you know, with the dynamic that we've got right now of where interest rates are at and where home prices are at, it can be difficult with most people's down payment amounts. It can be difficult to make it to where it's like, hey, it's cheaper for you to buy than it is rent. It was like that for a long time where it was like a no-brainer to buy versus rent. But as you know, interest rates have come up, and also home prices have come up, depending on your down payment and, you know, the loan that you qualify for and all that stuff, it can be harder to bridge that gap. And so for these guys, you know, because they're going to rent out the rooms and all that stuff, it's actually going to be way cheaper for them. And then the bonus to all of this, not only do they have security in where they're going to live in the, you know, because they don't have to worry about, you know, I hear all the time from people that call me up and they're like, hey, I've been renting this place for 6 years or whatever, and my landlord notified me that they're selling the place and I've got 60 days to, you know, to move, or 90 days to move, or, you know, whatever the case is. So, you know, when you own the house, you control, you know, that timeline, of course. And then those guys are going to be building equity over time. And when it comes time for them to part ways, you know, they'll be able to make a decision on, you know, who knows, maybe, you know, Jason decides that he wants to keep the place, and so he refinances or gets a line of credit to pay out John for his equity share and gets everybody off the loan because he's now graduated college. He's got his, you know, his big job. He's making big money, all that stuff, and he can do it on his own. Or maybe they, you know, they sell it, part ways, and they take their, you know, whatever the equity accumulation is over time. And then now they actually have a down payment to go buy a house. They don't need to lean on dad for help, you know, for a down, or, you know, it'd be nice if anytime you can get, you know, money from the family is always good. But, you know, this is going to set them up basically to where in the future, they're going to, you know, have a lot more options as well. So it's definitely, in my personal opinion, this checks off all the boxes when it comes to house hacking. Does it make sense? Is this a good move, you know, like on a long-term play, for all of those reasons, you know?
Okay. Well, for me, here are the big three things that I'm looking at. One is, you, like you mentioned before, rents are high. And so the idea is if you can get in a situation where you're house hacking or you're paying close to what you'd be paying in rent, you're good. So I think going together in this house, if they can rent out, maybe get a 4-bedroom, rent out a couple rooms, they're in good shape. Now, the other thing too that I like about this scenario is the fact that they're both single. Now, why does that matter, right? Well, when you're young, you can actually move into a little bit of a fixer. It doesn't have to be the perfect home. You don't have to really deal with even schools that much or whatever. You can jump into a fixer. You can spend your weekends in the house fixing it up, and you can actually put in sweat equity to something that will actually appreciate. So it's like if they get into a house and they've told me before and they're like, hey, it doesn't have to be perfect. We're very handy. We've been doing this all our life. Like we can put in floors. We can do this. We can do that. So the idea for them as well is they can get a house that maybe is unattractive to people who want turnkey, maybe moving in with a family. They're like, look, all we need is a room that we can live in. On the weekends, we can fix it up and we're good. So because of their age, because of their situation, they're okay at being flexible about doing this, which is, I love that idea. Because when you're young, sweat equity, you have time on your hands. You have friends that can help you. You can build stuff out. You can do whatever you want to do. Be creative. Watch some HGTV shows and fix it up. So for them, maybe a normal couple who's moving in, maybe let's say the Rosemont area is looking like for like $550. These guys are like, look, get us something for $400 that we can put in some sweat equity. We can turn it into $500. And then at the end of the day, either rent it or we could sell it. We got appreciation. We could part ways. And now we got down payments to move into something, each of us, when we are our families. So this is a great, great situation for them. But now Aaron and I did talk about offline. There's one speed bump that we need to overcome with this. Although dad has great credit, although dad has great income, dad comes with some debt, which is messing with the DTI a little bit. So it's actually going up, right? From 39% to like 50, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you add all the numbers together, it's like right under 50%. So, you know, the one thing that, you know, when you take their down payment amount, because, you know, Jason and John, they'd saved up, you know, some money, about 10 grand, but, you know, that's not enough to make everything, you know, come together, right? And so one of the things that you and I have talked about in previous, you know, episodes was basically one of the things that when we're trying to figure out, like, what makes the most sense. One of them is your FICO score is going to really kind of dictate your interest rate, the cost of your mortgage insurance, ultimately, you know, and of course, what programs you're eligible for. But with these guys, having a 685 FICO score and having a minimal down payment, well, that really makes FHA a much more attractive financing vehicle for them versus conventional financing. Because again, on conventional, basically, for every 20 points that you're under 800, you know, you go from 780, 760, 740, and so on, the rate gets a little bit worse and the mortgage insurance gets a little bit more expensive. And there's kind of this breaking point where it makes more sense to do FHA financing for that reason. So the cool thing about FHA financing, though, is that the debt ratios are extremely flexible compared to conventional financing. Conventional financing, they're going to cap you at 50%, like 50.00. You're not getting a loan if it goes over that. Whereas with FHA financing, you can literally go all the way up almost to 57%, 56 and change. And your housing ratio, meaning like the actual monthly payment on the house compared to what your income is, can be all the way up to 47%, almost 46 and change. And so in these guys' scenarios, although they're not going that high, doing the FHA financing basically made it to where the debt to income ratio was not a problem. It also kept their housing expense lower versus going with the conventional, because we didn't have to, you know, take the hit to the cost of the rate or the cost of the mortgage insurance for the 685 FICO, because it doesn't matter, 700, 685, whatever, you're getting the same deal basically. Whereas conventional, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, they're going to beat you up for every 20 points, like I said. So, you know, the curveball that we had and the solution for that was with the higher debt ratio, it was to switch it into an FHA loan and make the deal happen.
Okay, but here we got another curveball thrown back at you. So we're looking in Rosemont and we're seeing stuff that would qualify for FHA rolling around $500,000. And you know, talk to Jason and John. They're like, hey, man, you know, we're okay with a fixer. We want to keep it lower. And we've seen some fixers in the area for about 400 to 420. That's what we want. So we have a conversation going with FHA. There's tighter restrictions. A lot of the houses you're looking at won't even qualify for FHA. So then, of course, I call up Aaron and say, look, man, we're looking around 400, 420 houses that are definitely not going to be qualifying for FHA. No matter how creative we are with the pest inspection, fixing it up ahead, all that stuff too, we just, it's not going to work. So what do we do there? Curveball to you.
Well, so then what we did was we went back to the drawing board and, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when you're trying to figure out somebody's loan scenario and the whole, like this whole real estate puzzle, sometimes you think you've got the whole puzzle put together and, you know, it's like missing that one annoying piece that you can't find or whatever. And a lot of times what you got to do is you got to kind of break the whole thing up and kind of, you know, put it back together, you know, in a different way. And so that's exactly what we did with the Thomas family. And so what we ultimately did was there were two different things. We, after analyzing the liabilities, the monthly debts, liabilities that Jason, John, and their dad had, we identified two different things. We identified a debt that it was only a few grand, which in the big scheme of things was not that much money, that their dad could pay off, which would eliminate a sizable monthly payment, which would then reduce the DTI. But also what we found was that if we had Jason pay down a credit card, because you know how it goes, you go into college, it's crazy that they do it like this, but you know, you start school and it's like on orientation day, there's all the credit card booth companies all over campus just feeding these young kids credit. And, you know, of course, Jason, you know, was one of those guys that took out a credit. And although he didn't go YOLO with it and like ruin his life, he does have, you know, he had like a $800 balance and his limit was like $1,000. You know, he's only, you know, he's a young kid. He's only got a 680 something FICO. So that, you know, that takes a toll. And so what we did was we also had them pay that balance down to around $300. And that got the ratio of how much he owed versus his credit to his credit limit. And that boosted his score to where then now he was above 700. And that basically changed the cost of the PMI. It made the rate a little bit better. And so ultimately, between paying off a small debt that dad had to improve the DTI, along with making a small tweak to another debt to boost the FICO score, we were able to actually make this whole thing work to where conventional financing penciled, you know, the DTI worked, the monthly payment made sense, and we got to avoid having to do the FHA financing, which FHA is not a deal killer, guys. FHA is just going to require a little bit more due diligence by the appraiser. And there are some specific things that FHA requires the appraiser to make sure that it meets minimum standards. For example, and I'll just give you one example, the difference between FHA and conventional. You know, on an FHA inspection, the appraiser, not the home inspector, the appraiser will actually turn on the air conditioner unit to make sure that it works. Whereas a conventional appraiser, they're just going to make sure that the thing exists. They're not turning it all on. They're just making sure that it exists. So for example, let's say that this fixer that these guys wanted to buy has an AC unit problem, you know. Now we know that, you know, that's going to definitely come up with an FHA, whereas on a conventional, unless the appraiser's getting cute, you know, that's not going to come up. So there's a lot of things where an FHA can basically cause some things to come up that then the seller has to potentially address. They got to repair it if they want to get that FHA loan. So a lot of times that's why you'll hear that it's like, hey, no FHA over here, guys. That just means that the seller basically thinks that there's some repairs that are going to need to be made and they don't want to make them. So that's what we did to get this deal done.
All right, good, good. Okay, so Aaron hands me the $500,000 pre-approval. We're going shopping. Jason and John are showing me all fixers because that's what they want. So we find a fixer that's about $400,000 in the Rosemont area. Now, why is this good for them? Number one is it eliminates the VA buyers and the FHA buyers because they're too scared to put in offers on this house. Number two is because the market is what it is, people want turnkey. They want to get into those homes, start their summer, and I don't know, fixers just aren't the thing right now. And fixers are what we're seeing stay on the market a little bit longer, even at this competitive price point. So John and Jason find a house. It's actually three doors down from Justin's house. They pull the trigger on it. They start doing their work, and they're happy campers. Dad is happy as well, too. Now, hopefully in 3 years, Aaron and I will keep doing this stuff so we can give you a little update on what's happening with Jason and John. But as you know, and as we know, this scenario does exist in the Sacramento area. And if it's you guys out there who are thinking about maybe doing a buy, maybe you have a scenario that you want us to run through, we'd be more than happy to run through with you. Every scenario is different. Every client is different. And there are solutions that you might not even know about. So hit us up. Like I said, Aaron, New Way Mortgage, he's got an amazing YouTube channel. Me, as always, you know where to reach out to me. And that's it. Any parting words for this scenario? Any parting words for the Thomas family, Aaron?
Look into a tenants in commonancy for your vesting. You'll thank me later.
All right, guys, that was it. Enjoy the video. Like, comment, subscribe. Until next Monday, till we give you another scenario, we're out of here. Guess what, guys? The video just ended. But don't worry, we have more videos just like that one right over there. And if you missed that red subscribe button during the course of the video, we got you covered right there. Hit that subscribe button. We promise to bring you some amazing content. We won't let you down. Now, if you're looking for a team in the Sacramento metro area to work with, we'd love to talk to you one-on-one. We always include a Zoom link down below. So book a time where we can talk to you a little one-on-one, find out exactly what your real estate needs are.